It's time for the Access of Easy podcast, the weekly technology digest that keeps you ahead of the curve. Brought to you by EasyDNS.com.
Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the Access of Easy. This is number 292. My name is Joey. Here, as always, with my co-host, Len. Brother, how are you doing today? Beautiful day in Southern Ontario. I was just outside on my back deck not 15 minutes ago. It's good to see you. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good. I haven't yet had a chance to enjoy what's outside. I'll be doing so shortly. And not just that, we got a three-day weekend. It's going to be beautiful to enjoy what we have in store. So, yeah, everything's good over here. Joey, how about you? Everything good over there?
Top notch, man. Went to the gym over my lunch hour today. Hit a nice 315 squat, the three wheel, 315 pounds, elusive. So as you know, I have a stance on whether or not males should be allowed to vote if they can't squat 225. At 315, does that mean I get 1.5 votes every time an election is called? What do you think?
Fair? I don't know. I mean, I can't do 225. Even if I train to do it, I have a bum knee. I'll never be able to get there. So I guess I'm SOL with respect to ever.
You can send me a DM. Maybe send me a signal message. I'll vote. My second vote will be for whoever you want. And then I'll take my first vote for whoever I want. What do you think?
But it's kind of like, I don't know. If you're using that as the metric, then it's something you've been training for your whole life. We could do something else. I mean, try hitting three serves into a diamond in a row, and whoever does ridiculous. That gets...
You'll never take over my squat democracy, sir. Never. We'll never accept it.
Oh, it's all a advantage of viewpoint, and your vantage point is that's the be-all and end-all. That's cool. Are you doing ass to the floor, or are you just a half-assed type of guy when it comes to squatting?
No. We got to go. You got to go below parallel. If you don't go below parallel, don't even bother showing up. Do it at your house instead. You got to. People in the gym are watching. Actually, a guy today, this is a way far afoot from the show, but I'll discuss it just briefly here. At the gym, you know, there's a lot of people who think the gym is a place where everyone is just grunting, screaming, sweating, throwing chalk all over the place, making a mess, throwing weights on the ground, making a lot of noise. But, you know, I went today and was there with a buddy of ours, actually, Len, Manny Monero, who we've talked about on the other show a number of times. It can be, and it's very supportive. And so I had the three wheels on the bar there, and I was kind of getting myself hyped up for it, talking to our buddy saying, this is going to be, you know, the first time I've done this in a long time. And got under it, did the rep. And during the rep, I could hear a guy behind me who was doing deadlifts going, get it. And he came up to us after, congratulated me. You know, we were talking a bit about our weightlifting past, and our buddy Manny Monero, who doesn't do a lot of gym work, was, I think, enjoying the conversation and the environment. And a lot of people are afraid of that environment. Shouldn't be. It's an environment that's very supportive. A lot of people there want to see you do your best and, you know, want to support you. And, you know, the expectation is that when the time comes, you'll support them as well. Very important stuff, man. Much the same as the environment you see in a place like Bitcoin. Tech and surveillance, security, all these things. Everyone wants the best for the other people playing because it's a rising tide situation. And that's rare these days, man. So happy to see that. And of course, happy our friend was there to experience it as well.
I'm happy if people get wrecked in Bitcoin because it gives me more opportunities to buy on cheap.
Okay.
There you go. I want everybody to succeed.
Well, with that, let's get into this week's quotes. Last week's quote was, those who are capable of tyranny are capable of perjury to sustain it. Great quote. Was by Lysander Spooner. She's a legal theorist and political philosopher. No one got that one. So
I would have never gotten that
one. Me neither. Fantastic quote, though, as we said. This week's quote, Len. The welfare of the people has always been the alibi of tyrants. These are really good quotes. And I would love to know where Mark finds them, Mark and the EasyDNS team. So if you know, post it in the comments. The rules, same as always. Can't Google it, okay? Especially not on this, the holiest of weekends. Cheating, strictly prohibited, okay? We can't have that. And if you post the right answer, you get your renewal on EasyDNS, which is great. I'd love to see that. So take your time. Think about it. And maybe you've read it or seen it somewhere, post it in the comments and the value comes back to you on the other end. We're looking forward to seeing if anyone gets it. I think, Len, in the 6 or 7 weeks we've done this show, maybe twice somebody has guessed the quote, I think, something like that.
Because maybe we have to up the ante. What if we throw in headshots and we sign them? Maybe more people would be more apt to
headshots,
submit.
Headshots, yeah.
Yeah.
And NFTs of my personal squat records, maybe. Can we do that?
They're all on the blockchain for anybody to view. So
Yeah, Mark has actually approved all these things, NFTs, headshots, all EZDNS supported, sanctioned, and approved. So if you have any problems, take it up the chain to Mark there. Definitely do not come to us with that, Alan. I don't think I want to talk about
no.
that.
No, or we could do headshots on Call of Duty. That's also another option. So
yeah, video games. Perfect. Yeah, set it up. So we got a couple of big stories here this week. As always, Len, never a better time to be too careful with your data, with your privacy, and more, Len, with your AI interactions. So let's get into it. What do you got on the docket today?
Let's talk about mass surveillance because, well, over in the UK, there is the end-to-end encryption messages that are under the eyes of lawmakers. And for those who are unaware what is end-to-end encryption, it's basically programs that allow for secure messaging between users that reduce the potential of the information to be intercepted by a third party. Isn't this works well as long as there's security that's being practiced on both sides of the coin. So all users must respect the security and it's not compromised. So some examples are Signal, Telegram, and there's a whole bunch more. But back to the story, the aptly named bill called Online Safety Bill. And why do they always come up with these names? Might as well call it that you have no right to privacy in the internet bill. The bill is currently at the committee stage at the House of Lords. And the bill will achieve two standing goals of the UK government, namely removing harmful internet content and improving visibility to end-to-end content. And justifying the passage of the bill will be national security. And what they're saying is stopping child porn as well. So these are worthy goals to achieve if it helps protect citizens. But potential overreach may be something to consider. We could just look not too far from what we talked about in the past, Section 702, and who may have been impacted for it. I mean, we talked about how a congressman was potentially the end result of that. So check out that the episode of The Axis of Easy. And the online safety bill will make platform providers responsible for the content posted on their platform. Content that will be required to be removed will be required to be removed that is deemed to be harmful for security and so forth. This is eyebrow raising, if you ask me, because we could go down this path. The law would apply to end-to-end encryptions, as I mentioned, but how will they achieve all this? Because end-to-end encryption programs are deemed to be secure. Well, the bill will require the messaging app providers to allow for a backdoor to gain access to the encrypted data. So what happens if the companies themselves give the middle finger to this request? Well, fines could be levied up to £18 million. That's around $22 million, or 10% of the global revenue. And they have the potential to have the application blocked and charges of criminal liability handed out to the people in upper management. This really opens up a can of worms because end-to-end encryption programs, if they ever do this, will make those programs deemed to be worthless as they cannot achieve what they're trying to bring, secured messaging. So very, very scary stuff. I'm not sure what the status is. I know it's in committee right now, but if it gets passed and gets royal assent, something I'm going to be looking for in the next little while.
Not to beat a dead horse here, Len, but you know, we've talked about this a lot on the Canadian Bitcoiners podcast. We've talked about it with guests that we've had on that show. And we've talked about it here on Access of Easy as well. The nomenclature, you know, that is applied to the naming of these bills, it continues to just freak me out. And I think most sane people are freaked out by this. The Patriot Act in the States may be the most famous example, but stuff like this, the online safety bill, no sure sign that you will be less safe in your communications than a name that includes safety in the title. That's number one. Number two, lawmakers are they're intentionally trying to obscure the nature of the intention here. And as you mentioned, generally speaking, when it comes to something like data privacy, especially end-to-end encryption, which by the way, you know, was on vogue 5, 6, 7, 8 years ago, maybe even longer, when WhatsApp, Facebook Messenger, iMessage, other apps that were quote unquote mainstream were forced basically to go end-to-end encrypted because other options were available that people were looking to more and more for their daily communications. This kind of stuff in an app that's meant to draw you in and keep your eyes on it, I think specifically of Facebook in this case, though Instagram is another good example. I'm sure there's others that I'm not considering because I'm getting a little longer in the tooth here every day. The intention is to bring people into those app ecosystems and use the messenger service as a third or fourth kind of option in the app. So Facebook, for example, you go in there, you share your data, you share your photos, you share your thoughts, and it helps advertisers target you. It's a bonus if you stay there for the messaging. When it comes to something like this, Bill, as you mentioned or at least alluded to, when governments look to end-to-end encryption apps to force backdoors or try to get them to force backdoors into their services, what happens? In my view, I think what you're likely to see, instead of those apps offering the amount of information, the honeypot that governments are hoping for, you know, Len, you probably agree with this. I'd be curious for your thoughts. People will migrate to other apps. They'll go other places. They'll go to something like Session, which is available for Android and iOS, which is a very, very, very small fee, I think powered by Bitcoin. That may be another app I'm thinking of. But in any case, it's a single session chat where if you want to share a quick message with someone, you can do it. There's no record on either phone. There's no server. There's nothing. You push people away with information that you view as damaging because you want to stop people who are sharing harmless information from using those apps. And to me, this is, you know, emblematic of a larger problem in government policy. It's short-sighted. It's behind, I think, in the most kind interpretation. And, ultimately, then it doesn't serve the purpose that is being made public. Is that the intended purpose? I don't know. We could talk about that. But generally speaking, I think that if you look at any of these initiatives, it's always going to fall short of what the government says it's going to provide in terms of safety.
It's usually reactionary, and they're always well behind the eight ball when it comes to this. And one that I've been looking at a little while is called Keet, K-E-E-T, that runs on the Noster network. And through that, good luck, because all you have is a private key, and you can never find out who that private key belongs
to. How does that look? Give me the 20-second, 30,000 foot. I've not heard of this.
Yeah, it's very basic. It almost looks like a more like a signal, but just primitive. And it's just, from what I understand, every conversation I had is just user to user. I don't know if there's any group chats involved, but it's as secure could get. As long as you're able to secure your private key, there's no way to identify who that belongs to, especially if you go through VPN. Good luck. You'll never
find out. More often, right? Like, you and I have talked about this kind of private key mechanism for identifying and securing your identity online. It seems to me that more tech savvy people are looking to this mechanism and looking to that method to secure their information. It doesn't seem to be going any other way. And, you know, I doubt very much that the UK lawmakers, Canadian, American, whatever, you know, pick your other European country if you want, lawmakers understand any of this stuff. They're always going to be behind the curve, reactionary, as you called it. And it defeats the purpose of legislation like this. It pushes harmless information away from networks that otherwise, you know, should be able to manage that kind of communication. And it's bad for the companies that are targeted. You know, you kind of get so big and the government tries to take you down or take you down a notch or force you to do this kind of nonsense. Anyway, I don't want to drag this out because this is supposed to be a short show, but this one in particular, it bothers me because it's something that you and I have seen a lot over the last 10 years. And it doesn't seem like there's any lessons being learned. That's the frustrating thing.
Yeah, we just keep going down this path, but we'll continually adapt. And another thing that may adapt is AI. I mean, that seems to be all the rage these days. And ChatGPT seems to be getting a lot of press. Somebody was able to use it to write code that resembles ransomware. And the code was ultimately deemed to be worthless, but the process to obtain this code is rather interesting. A gentleman by the name of Mark Stockley, he wrote an article for Malware Bytes, and he outlined the process in which he achieved it. And he was able to jump through all these hurdles imposed by ChatGPT, as it normally wouldn't handle these type of requests. So if you simply go out there and ask for the AI to provide you or to create code for you that looks like ransomware, it's not going to do it. But you know what? He did this through what he says, quote, social engineering, end quote. So he's essentially duping the AI. And really, what a world we live in when you could actually do such a thing. So how did he get around all this? Well, he was asking it to well, the initial thing he said was he asked for it to write a code or write code to encrypt a single file. And then he advanced it further. He said, okay, how do I encrypt a whole directory? And then he asked it further. He asked it, how could he have then the original copy deleted and so forth? So through these series of questions, without going into the very specific thing he wanted, a ransomware, he was able to have this generated, this ransomware code created. And so he was able to fool the AI, and it ultimately provided him with the ransomware program, at least the coding in C, which means leads me to believe with the safeguards that are included in ChatGPT, it's not smart at all, because it got duped by just one individual who asked a series of questions within the same session. So as a result, ChatGPT doesn't seem to be very bright. So just thinking outside the box is an easy way to just get around all the protocols and all the hurdles put up by ChatGPT. So you figure if it's smart enough, it's AI, should it be able to fix these problems moving forward? Probably not. But another thing to consider is that it's all the messing around that's going on. There's a lot of things that you could do with AI, from gathering some code that could really interrupt people's lives. I would imagine a lot of people are looking at this and trying to find ways to screw up people's lives, gain access to funds, their information, and so forth. ChatGPT and other AI programs is going to make a heck of a lot more people interested, and there's going to be probably an uptick in a lot of this moving forward. Are they going to be successful? Probably not, given the output from this one. It looks like the ransomware coding was pretty much junk, but as long as you have a base in coding, then you can work on it and improve on it. So be very careful, and this is something that is going to be something that's going to be on my radar moving forward. How they're going to be adapting this, changing ChatGPT protocols, I don't know, but it's not very smart. It's, you could easily get around it, even with social engineering. What an absolute joke.
In the interest of time constraints, I won't be long on this, but you know, Len, we've talked a little bit about the kind of people who are in charge of putting on the quote unquote guardrails on something like this to stop it from making, you know, inappropriate jokes or jokes that are inappropriate today to the people who are using the service. I suspect it's the same level of competency when it comes to stuff like ransomware. And so, yeah, naturally, you know, as we've seen a few times now with the ChatGPT or during the ChatGPT saga, people get around the safeguards that are in place, probably because the folks in charge of trying to dictate what this thing will and won't do just aren't competent. And this is a danger in AI. Mario Gibney, who works for AIGS, it's an AI ethics committee in Canada, has been on the other show, the Bitcoin show. And we've talked about this, man. Like the importance of guardrails in AI is sort of, you know, at this point beyond dispute. It's important that we establish what the norms and ethic of an AI model should be. But this is a great example of, you know, making sure the right people have the wheel when it comes to stuff like this. It looks like this fella who wrote the article, Mark Stockley, has a little bit of background in tech, but I guess objectively, Len, like I don't want to speak for the guy, I don't want to speak for the space, but objectively shouldn't have been able to do this, but did it. It seems rather easily. It's like you know, probably a 15-minute, 10-minute read. It really doesn't seem like it's that difficult to do, which is a little bit alarming, right? Like we talked in this show before about the nature of malware, ransomware, all this stuff. A lot of people are subject to these things, and a lot of people in the general population fall victim to it. If, you know, if this guy thinks the malware is bad or the ransomware is bad, okay, that's fine. That's his standard. But, you know, does my 65-year-old mother view it as bad, or does she view it as threatening? Does she view it as a real problem that she has to deal with? Maybe without telling anyone, maybe without asking for help. I don't know. To me, this is an example of how important it is that the guardrails and the people in implementing and employing the guardrails and monitoring the guardrails are competent. And to me, Len, yet again, it seems like they are not. And you're laughing, but it's all the time. It's the same story all the time. Like anyone who tells me I got to be safe and they're here for my safety, they're either incompetent or compromised or some combination of the two, right? It's almost invariably the case.
Yeah. Let's move on. We'll talk about a story which involves Disney.
Come to the after show, the Access of Easy after show. We will discuss this for 55 minutes. the downfalls of safety teams yet to be released.
So let's talk about Disney, the metaverse, and AI. What a interesting mix of players this is. Well, In February 2022, Disney created a metaverse division of the company, and this is supposed to usher in what they called the next generation storytelling. And this division comprised of about 50 individuals up until earlier this week, at which point we learned that those 50 individuals are being or have been laid off as a result of the closure of this metaverse division. And 14 months is all it took from the creation to closure. And that's all it took for Disney to realize that the metaverse is one big giant piece of crap. And it doesn't take long for something to be considered the darling of the industry one day and a joke the next day. Metaverse is another one. And this looks like Disney, by shifting over to AI, is that looks like that this is going to be their next thing they're going to be chasing, the next dream. It's another headline they're chasing. It's another thing that is the hot thing of the day. And is it another example of Disney showing up late to the dance now that they're trying to get into AI? Maybe they can make an AI platform that is tailored towards Disney's core beliefs and principles. But something I don't really want to touch with a 10-foot pole, even if that pole has been sterilized after the pole dance contest that just took place. Because take a look what's going on with Disney. It's an interesting concept what's going on over there. Company has gone a certain direction, and a lot of people are just scratching their head. But it seems like they're following Meta's lead, because, or Facebook, or whatever you want to call it these days, because Meta too announced not too long ago that they're going to be focusing more on AI as of February. But it makes me wonder, does Meta and Disney share the same board of directors, given that they seem to be chasing the same dream a few months apart in terms of the announcement? But it just makes me wonder what's going on here. Disney, now they're getting into AI, ditching Metaverse. Seems to be they're following suit with Meta's lead. But will this lead to riches and prosperity moving forward? Who the heck knows? But the Metaverse, what a piece of crap that is.
My guess is no. Interesting to know here, Len, that Bob Iger, who is the current CEO of Disney, was ousted from his previous position just before COVID started. Do you know what his previous position was?
Well, was he in telecom, telemedia?
His previous position in 2020, from which he resigned or was ousted, was the CEO of Disney. And so he's been the CEO, and now he's the CEO again. And I think that Bob Iger, in the entertainment space, Iger has quite a following, because he built Disney into what is basically a monolithic brand. Disney has sustained through all manner of cultural changes, all manner of changes in parenthood, family formation. And you can say what you want about family formation as a, as an input to entertainment profits. You know, some people say it's not really a big deal that kids will like the same shit, same things, I should say, over 20 years, 30 years, regardless of family formation. Other people say the family formation plays a big role, regardless of where you sit on that spectrum. The fact of the matter is that kids are part of an information economy that just wasn't the same 15 years ago as it is today. And so Disney, if any company has had to adjust, Disney is the company that has had to adjust the most when it comes to what they're providing to their target audience. And don't forget, Len, their target audience can't really give them feedback in a way that, what's a good example? Spotify could, or YouTube could, or telecom companies could. Disney's relying on children to tell their parents what they like. And Disney's done a good job with that. Now, when it comes to the metaverse thing, I think that Iger and Disney probably see the writing on the wall the same way you and I see the writing on the wall when it comes to Metaverse, Web3, this sort of, zero interest rate baby nonsense that's been going on for the better part of 30 years now. It really came to a head since COVID with the work from home thing. You know, Metaverse really took on a whole different meaning and found a whole new head of steam. I think that now that people are going back to work, now that parents are seeing what the outcomes can be for kids who have been at home, not in school, not in front of their teachers or peers for the better part of 2 years, 3 years, the metaverse is dying on the vine. And Disney is wise for doing this. My question is, when is Meta going to do the same thing? Because I think they really made a huge mistake. It's a thing that's going to cost Zuckerberg his reputation for sure, but maybe also the dynastic thinking that goes on at Facebook to whatever degree it goes on. I think it'll cost them on that front as well. And this 2-year, 3-year thing at home that we had during the pandemic cause a lot of people to lose their minds and lose their priorities. Good for Disney for realizing this was a mistake before it got to be too late. I don't know. We'll see if other companies seem to realize the same thing. I know that I've heard whispers of Apple doing something in the metaverse and augmented reality. Maybe, maybe not. But for me, Len, I'm not a Disney shareholder. I don't know if you are. I'm sure our pensions both hold Disney. But to me, this is a nice move, man. 7,000 people is a lot of people. It's a nice cost savings, especially if all those people are making, you know, $90,000, $110,000 doing God knows what for a bunch of people who just won't care about it in the year anyway.
Well, it's prudent to get into it just to explore it, but to do a whole pivot, it's very, very challenging. So what Meta is doing, it's going to be, they banked a heck of a lot on the success of Meta, and good luck to them because their stock
price. How can they still think that that's a plausible business model at this point? How can they view that? I mean, this is not a Meta story. Maybe if we get a Meta story in this newsletter at some point, we'll talk about it. But to me, I just look at this and think this is a good move. Other people should have done this already. Anything that's any company that's not doing this after a big metaverse investment or a dynastic metaverse pivot like Facebook made, I think is just sunk cost. I can't imagine it's anything else. They must see the writing on the wall. They're just trying to manifest something that's never going to happen. It's crazy to me.
Well, let's move on. Let's talk about spyware. And we got wind earlier this week that Google's threat analysis group, which works to counter government-backed hacking and attacks against Google and their users, has disclosed two limited and highly targeted attacks. And these spyware campaigns took advantage of zero-day vulnerabilities and phones running outdated security patches. And we mentioned in the show before at least one time, and we'll just rehash it again. It's to your advantage to update your phone and run the latest security patches to protect yourself from a potential attack. And this applies to your phones, to your computers, and even your smart toilets, because I know myself, I'm not going to let my poo-poo be subjected to any sort of attack. So there you go. So my smart toilet is going to be up to date all the time. The threat analysis group report indicates that the people behind this may be affiliated with the Spanish spyware firm Variston. Did I pronounce that right? Variston?
Probably ITN. Not, but we'll just add that to the list of names you've had a hard time with over the last 2 years or so.
It's Spanish, so Variston, I guess. Anyways, they build themselves as a custom security solutions provider, and they're based in Spain. And the U.S. government has been cracking down on spyware. So anybody that has any affiliations with Variston IT may have some answers that need questions that will be needing answers by the U.S. government, because as I mentioned, the U.S. government is cracking down on spyware, especially those that are installed on government issued devices, both domestically and internationally. And in fact, I would imagine that this spyware exists on a number of different people's phones if they're trying to attack them. People that are working in embassies abroad, trade missions, military bases, and so many others, they are very lucrative for potential spyware attacks. These zero-day vulnerability attacks that they could attach to the phone. There's a lot of information that foreign targets want to get information from the U.S. government, and these are suspected targets. They're the squishies out there that they're going to be able to essentially eradicate and get the information from. So very, very interesting stuff. This company that I don't know how it still remains in business, given that it's been doing this, and this is not the first time that they've released something like this. And back in October, they also released some sort of zero-day vulnerability attack against Google users that were using Chrome. So they have a history of releasing spyware-related attacks against users. So this Variston company, they're my no coiner of the week, if we have a no coiner for this show. But nonetheless, this is just another example. If you have a device, make sure you are up to date with respect to all the security patches. May not be the most up-to-date OS, but the security side of things, that is something you can't discard because it's in your best interest to do so.
What was the lead story last week? It was drop everything, update your Android device, right? Update your Android phone. I think it was last week or the week before. So if you had done that, maybe you would have saved yourself a little bit of trouble here. It's interesting that Variston, maybe in Spanish there, is a firm that traffics in this kind of stuff. Have you ever heard the term, Len, spyware firm?
I have not before until this today. Week.
Really? It's very strange, right? I've not heard that either. And so you make a good point there. I don't know how these guys are allowed to exist kind of running these sorts of operations against major companies. Google is not a fly-by-night organization, you know? They're a multinational worth, you know, upwards of $1 trillion. So interesting. I'll just say, in the interest of remaining brief, update your phones, update your apps. And if you're using Chrome, maybe think about another browser. I hate to say it, Len, but you know, since I've had a newish Microsoft laptop, I've switched to Edge basically exclusively. It's faster, it's easier, it's better, seems to be more secure. And I can't imagine that people who are on Chrome today, when switching to a new computer, are going to go to Chrome and see, you know, the diminishing returns in terms of performance, diminishing returns in terms of security. Google is an example of a company that's really got their fingers in so many different pies, whether it's mobile, personal computing, cloud storage, video, all these things. And so the more things you do, chances are the less of those things you're going to do really, really well. And you open yourself up to new surfaces for attack. I think this is a good example of that. I expect this to continue, and maybe Google at some point will, you know, really focus in on security at the expense of performance or at the expense of operability. I'm not sure, but interesting all the same. I would just say keep your phones and stuff up to date. As a retail user, you have no other choice. You really have to stay on top of that.
Firefox is another browser people could potentially
use
open source.
Yeah.
And Molvad, sure. They released a browser just this week, and I have yet to try it out, but I should do it this weekend. Anyways, let's move on. Let's talk about TikTok. We talk about them again, right? It seems that every week they're on the agenda for us to talk about. Restrictions have been put in place to stop the usage of TikTok on government-issued devices in the U.S., and lawmakers want to take it to the next level. And the Restrict Act, another one of these beautifully named acts, these bills that they just want to kind of hide what it is really trying to do. It's the purpose of this Restrict Act is to protect national security. But this sauce comes with a little bit of added flavor too, because it's going to include some new monitoring powers alongside what it is they're trying to achieve. So the act will require a social media platform to provide and hand over detailed information of users at the request of the government. So in a perfect world, this is fine, but how long before government officials use it to get info on people that are vocal against the government of the day? And this might prohibit people from being expressive in their views and could indirectly impact the First Amendment, and it would be less likely to actually use the First Amendment. So while what they're trying to achieve here, I kind of agree with it on the surface, but as you dig into it, the amount of information you're trying to get is it's not great, because it's pretty sad. The banning of TikTok, I'm with it. I'm for it, because anything to prevent any more information to flow into the hands of the CCP, that's A-OK with me. But I just don't agree with the tools that they're trying to achieve, that they're trying to implement and to achieve this goal. So apps like TikTok, I have said it before, it's damaging to society a number of ways. Young people's perspective on various issues can be changed. Their political viewpoint can be altered. Their attention span would be significantly reduced, and I would say warped, and a whole other set of issues that come along with just viewing TikTok over and over again. But it's like they're trying to treat the symptoms by killing the patient. That's the way I'm looking at this particular bill. And if this bill is passed, the horse will be out of the barn, and there's no way to bring it back in. So there's going to be so much information that could be subjected to the government. Just at a whim, they could ask for it. And that would be a scary time. And we just talked about it earlier, peer-to-peer, end-to-end encryption services too. That could also be subjected to this too. So everything is basically on the table for them to look, review, and scrutinize. Very scary stuff.
The Restrict Act, I'll just rehash what I said on the CBP last week or the week before when we talked about this. The Restrict Act is clearly a power grab, and I'll tell you why. Any right-leaning, technologically inclined person knows that if you want to remove an app from the App Store, whether it's Gab or Parler or apps that are akin to those two, you can do it pretty simply. You contact Google and Apple and say, no more of this. We have to get this off the App Store. We don't want this on mobile devices because of X, Y, and Z. Whatever those X, Y, and Z are, doesn't matter. And you've seen basically the complete erasure of both those apps, Gab and Parler. I think Rumble also is another example of that, which tried to have an App Store app on the Apple iOS ecosystem platform. Didn't work out. It was denied. And so if they wanted to ban these things, they could, Len. My suspicion, as you know, is that what's actually happening here is politicians are posturing a way to pretend they are opposing something like TikTok without actually opposing it. And they're trying to grab a little bit of your sovereignty in the process, telling you what you can and can't access, what you can and can't watch, and what you can and can't have on your phone. Completely insane. The reason they're doing this is because as the demographics in the United States change, and it's not just the United States is experiencing this, but we'll talk about them because they're the example du jour. There's only so many ways to reach young voters. And at the moment, if you want to run an election campaign and reach people who are between 18 and 25, TikTok is the only way you can do it. You can't do it on Facebook. You can't do it on Instagram. You certainly can't do it with newspapers, print, or media on television. And so if you ban this app, you are cutting yourself off at the shins when it comes to running your campaign. And the Democrats specifically have a young voter base. They really do rely on to win some of these swing states. In my view, they probably understand that TikTok is indispensable at the moment. Until there's an alternative, until Google or Facebook or whatever, Instagram comes up with a proxy for that crowd, they have to use TikTok. I think they know that. And so what you're seeing is more posturing and positioning, virtue signaling, than you are actually people who want to pass meaningful legislation and quote unquote protect the American populace from data thievery. I think this is, again, you know, to use the term I used earlier, it's emblematic of a bigger problem. And to me, this is, you know, it's something that I think most people should have a handle on by now, but unfortunately, Len, it just seems like they don't. So I hope people are more careful and more considerate when they think about what it looks like to pass an act like this over 6 months, 12 months, 18 months in the face of potential bank wobbling, in the face of potential confidence in financials and stock markets and things of this nature and currencies even wobbling. You want to have free access to information. It's very important for the average person to have that. And it looks like the US government's moving away from that, unfortunately. Sad to see.
Well, you know what? YouTube Shorts is growing. I'm looking at stats here. Back in December, they were getting 1.5 billion users viewing their stuff in a month for YouTube Shorts versus 30 billion a day for TikTok.
Wow.
So that's a big difference. But it's 2 months later, in February, it was reported that Shorts reached a landmark of 50 billion views a day. So it's trending in the right direction.
How many total short video views are there though? Like, is the denominator growing as well? It must be at this point.
Yeah, it's hard for me to say. I mean, I need more time to figure that out.
Mm. You can't do but it right now? We got some time. You want to go ahead and just do a quick...
Let's do a two-hour show. No, let's move on to the last thing. We'll talk about Twitter and the Twitter algorithm. And this is the bane of many wannabe influencers out there. And it was in the news because the code, well, part of the code was leaked. And Elon, being the flamboyant billionaire that he is.
Agent of chaos, man. Agent of chaos.
He threw caution to the wind and he basically said, you know what? Let's just release a portion of the code. And he did so on GitHub. So it was released and he's like, leaked some of it was. And he's like, you know what? Let's just release more of it for people to see. And users have been combing over the code, or at least what has been released to date. And they're likely trying to find a way to game the system and gain an advantage over somebody else. Makes sense. But some interesting revelations as a result of just this brief coding that was released. Users, they could fall in several categories, including Democrat, Republican, or power user. Very interesting stuff. And also, all of Elon's tweets were flagged. Doesn't appear to be in a bad way, just the algorithm gave Elon's tweets a special flag to do whatever that they want to do. But with respect to flagging people on their political views, Democrat, Republican, Elon was saying that the code is an example that the company should get rid of this right away, because obviously this is something that it just creates a divide and it creates a bigger rift in society. And he's been pushing for more and more transparency. And to his credit, he has been able to achieve some of this. I think it's a real uphill battle, given that he inherited a framework that is Twitter, and it's not originally wasn't as open as it should be. And I don't know if he'll be able to achieve the transparency he wants to achieve. But really, the releasing of this code seems to be a knee-jerk reaction to the code being leaked. That's just my opinion. So it is a step in the right direction, but maybe his hand was forced to do so. But again, he's just almost like he's a child, and he's like, whatever happens that makes him happy for that day, he's going to do it to the detriment of the company, perhaps, who cares. But this is just very interesting stuff. But that the fact that they're flagging people in these political camps, that goes to show you for years and years and years, they've been segregating people and trying to create a divide and to create camps. They've done so. Here we are years later, and you see it in society. It's reflective of what's happened on Twitter. It's a sad state of affairs.
God bless Elon for releasing that algorithm. It's funny that the some of the webs there, Len, talking about how you would expect to see a For You timeline shape out if you'd followed certain people. It's crazy. You know, everyone knew this before, but if you engage with a tweet, there's like four levels of engagement, I think, right? One is if you just look at the tweet and stay on your home feed for just a split second longer or a second or two longer, there's a whole other level that like triples the likelihood that you'll see similar tweets if you click the tweet. If you click and stay for a minute, it's like 100x more likely you'll find something that's going to match that. And so, you know, if I look at my own timeline, I'm more likely to stay on posts that are difficult to understand. Most of the time, the stuff that's like on the other side of me politically or people doing heavy squats. And so you can imagine what my For You timeline looks like. It's an eclectic mix of heavy lifting and upset people who are, you know, unsure of their place in society. So interesting for me. I'll also note that a friend of ours, Len, who has some inside knowledge on Twitter and the inner workings of that platform, noted to me that one of the reasons you see Twitter, what's the best way to put this? One of the reasons you see Twitter kind of shuffling the way they do things live, sort of day to day, when it comes to the algorithms and the feedback that, the expected outcomes that an average user can expect to see, is because they don't have the three environment model that you would typically see in a company that size. Most of the time in a company that size, you would see an environment that's live, an environment that's for testing, and an environment that's for like base layer stuff that you would almost never change, things that are kind of critical to the operation. When Elon bought Twitter, apparently he maybe announced this, but I didn't notice it or didn't understand it when it came out. Twitter only has the active operating environment. There's no other way for them to change the code. And so some of the shortcomings you see day to day in Twitter are because Elon and the team can't actually use another version of the platform that's not as consequential for the average user. Interesting. So everything this guy is doing, he's basically fixing the plane while it's flying, which is an analogy you've probably seen. I've seen it a bunch of times, but truly that's what he's doing. It's really, really, you know, it's been fun. It's been entertaining for guys like you and me. I think if you were like a real Twitter head junkie, you may be frustrated with your For You feed being a little subpar, but you know, for Access of Easy, for Canadian Bitcoiners podcast, it's been fun. It's fodder for the shows. And maybe we'll get another story next week. Maybe we can get Elon on the show if we play our cards right. What do you think? Now that I know the algorithm, I just have to make him engage with my tweet for like 30 seconds, I think, and maybe we can get his attention.
No, you know what's under the hood, so you're able to achieve the goal that you're trying to achieve. And
Maybe.
Yeah.
Well, come to the after show. We'll talk more about that in the after show as well. We're going to be and here until 6 o'clock tonight, so...
Bitcoin has the test net. I mean, if Bitcoin could have a test environment, why can't Twitter have the same thing? It only makes sense for a billion-dollar company, multi-billion-dollar company to have it, but what the heck do I know?
We're shilling our token. We're getting out of here. Thanks for coming back to Access of Easy. That was number 292. We'll see you guys next week, same place, same time. Until then, take care of yourselves.
Yeah, take care.